who was buying and who was selling. Everyone was selling. I was long gone and sold a year earlier. Warren Buffett was buying. Everyone sells and the richest man in the world buys. Could it be that everyone is wrong? Yes, it could. If you want to live unlike everyone, you can't be like everyone. Don't confuse that with exceptionality. You have to lead the pack and have everyone follow. When the lambs are lining up single file for slaughter, you want to own the slaughterhouse. Chapter Summary, Fast Lane Distinctions. The commandment of entry states that as entry barriers fall, competition rises as the road weakens. Easy access roads carry more traffic. More traffic generates higher competition, and higher competition creates lower margins for the participants. Businesses with weak entry often lack control and operate in saturated marketplaces. Exceptionalism is required to overcome weak entry barriers. Access to a business road should be a process with a toll, not an event. Everyone consists of the general populace and is served by the mainstream media. If everyone were wealthy, everybody is doing it would work. And if everybody is wealthy, then no one is wealthy. Everyone is doing it is a signal to overbought conditions and the entrance of dumb money. Chapter 32, The Commandment of Control. There is no dependence that can be sure but a dependence on oneself. John Gay. Demand the driver's seat. Yes or no, you're either driving the fast lane or you aren't. You're either in control of your financial plan or you aren't. There is no in-between. And if you're not driving, you're sitting in the passenger seat and someone else is in control. Envision your dream car, boat, or plane. Great. Now here are the keys. You get it for 1 hour, unencumbered. Would you grab those keys and take it for a joyride using every single minute? Or would you plop your butt down in the passenger seat and resign, you take control. I'll sit here in the passenger seat and hitchhike a ride. Senseless? Not exactly. This is how many people approach business. They hitchhike. They give up the driver's seat and they violate the commandment of control. In doing so, they sacrifice control over their financial plan and ultimately make someone else rich. Hitchhiking a fast lane. While hitchhikers of life tread the sidewalk and are victims, the hitchhikers of business violate the commandment of control. A business hitchhiker seeks refuge from risk and cowers within the confines of a matriarchal organization. This subservient relationship renders a loss of control and leaves you vulnerable to actions of the driver. When you control your business, you control everything in your business, your organization, your products, your pricing, your revenue model, and your operational choices. If you can't control every aspect of your company, you're not driving. And if you can't drive, you set up yourself for sudden, unexpected crashes. Fast lane drivers retain control. Those who violate the commandment do not. Here are some general examples. Drivers create MLM companies. They don't join them. Drivers sell franchises. They don't buy them. Drivers offer affiliate programs. They don't join them. Drivers run hedge funds. They don't invest in them. Drivers sell stock. They don't buy stock. Drivers offer drop shipping. They don't use drop shipping. Drivers offer employment. They don't get employed. Drivers accept rents and royalties. They don't pay rents and royalties. Drivers sell licenses. They don't buy licenses. Drivers sell IPO shares. They don't buy them. So are you driving a fast lane or hitchhiking one? Now, if this hitchhiker description describes you, don't get discouraged or defensive. You can't be a driver in every instance. Heck, even I engage in hitchhiking activities. Fast lane hitchhikers can make good money, sometimes boatloads. However, understand this. The driver retains control and makes the big money. At best, the hitchhiker makes good money. Good money versus big money. There's a difference between good money, big money, and legendary money. Good money is making $20,000 a month. The cattle call of every network marketing company is, hey, you want to make $10,000 a month? Big deal. Remember, your windshield. It's big money only in your head. That's decent money, but nothing that's going to put you into a private jet and a 40-foot yacht on Newport Beach. Big money is $200,000 a month. Now we're talking. $200,000 every month will make a dent into your lifestyle. When you earn this level of income, life does change. And then there, of course, is legendary money, where you can earn more than $1 million every month. Outrageous? Not at all. When you leverage all five commandments and control your company, $1 million a month is not impossible. To hit big money or legendary money, you need to control your system and every aspect of that system. When you relinquish control and defer power to a higher authority, you cede big money to the driver and accept good money as the passenger. For example, my website offered an affiliate program. My best affiliate consistently earned $20,000 a month. Yes, he was making good money. He was the hitchhiking passenger and I was the driver controlling the affiliate process. However, think about the danger he assumed. At any moment, I could have instituted a new policy that would have reduced his earnings. I drove his income stream and he absorbed the risk that I wouldn't disturb, alter, or modify the affiliate agreement. And most importantly, as the driver, I was the one making big money, $200,000 a month, while he settled for good money, $20,000 a month. Similarly, you might have heard of the unique group of internet entrepreneurs called AdSense millionaires. Google AdSense is an advertiser network that online content publishers leverage to earn income from their website's traffic. There are affiliates, bloggers, and publishers who earn good money from using Google's AdSense program. Some content providers and bloggers earn six figures monthly. Arguably, this is big money, yet Google, the driver, makes the legendary money. No control equals crashes. Think about the dangers of hitchhiking. You get into some stranger's car and you let them drive. Hitchhiking a fast lane is an incredible risk, especially when your family is the cargo. My experience has repeated itself for countless entrepreneurs who learned the hard way. Here's some background. My forum leverages the Google Advertising Network, which pays revenue for ad clicks that evolve from my forum. It's a hitchhiking relationship. Google is the driver and my forum is the passenger. A thread at my forum discussed an ebook marketing program. As the thread progressed, the joke was made about a former bankrupt NBA player, and long story short, the folks at Google claimed the content violated their terms. My ads were terminated, and the revenue stopped immediately. Now imagine if this forum and the Google revenue were responsible for feeding my family. Imagine if I relied on it. Imagine if I was earning $15,000 a month from these ads, and in one big swoop, it was gone. No control, no say, no power. It took me 8 days to resolve the problem, and it exposed the dangers of hitchhiking a fast lane as a passenger versus driving it. For those 8 days, my income from that activity was zero. In any driver-hitchhiker relationship, the driver always makes more money than the hitchhiker and retains a critical component to fast lane strategy, control. I can't imagine running a company in which another entity has the power to instantaneously kill your revenue stream. If someone can flip a switch and destroy your business, you're playing roulette with your financial plan. The congenital danger of hitchhiking is that you relinquish control to the driver. And if the driver crashes into the wall, guess who goes with them? You. The problem with being a hitchhiker is you really never know the driver. The driver could be ethical, moral, and just, or the driver could be corrupt and evil. Either way, as a hitchhiker, you wave all power to your driver. He who owns the keys owns the power. Yet millions of people submit to this type of organizational control without pause. They sign franchise agreements giving control over crucial business decisions, including marketing, ads, and royalties. They join distributorships in which others dictate their compensation structure. Their product funnel is directed by a centralized source. They're told like automatons what they can and can't do. They're held hostage to a corporate patriarch, not realizing that they really aren't their own boss. If you can't change your product, are you the boss? If you can't change your price, Are you the boss? If you can't influence marketing decisions, are you the boss? Years ago, I joined a network marketing company. I had a friend who earned good money. Ultimately, the company changed its product line and compensation structure. My friend's income stream was disrupted and eventually disappeared. The asset he created, his downline and cash flow stream, vaporized in a matter of months. My friend had no control, despite claiming that he owned his own business. His mistake was to violate the commandment of control. He never had the keys to his business, and his empire was nothing but a mirage founded on a false foundation governed by a political party in which he had no voice. When drivers make radical turns and change terms, you have no choice but to go with them. If it's the cliff of bankruptcy or criminal neglect, their sinking ship becomes yours. Do you really want to engage in a business relationship like this? Think shark, not guppy. If you lived in an aquarium, would you rather be the shark or the guppy? Sharks eat. Guppies get eaten. Business is a fierce competition for the consumer's mind and their money. It's an expansive ocean where multiple species wage war over sustenance, money. In this oceanic game, you want to be at the top of the food chain, not at the bottom fighting your way up the top. Build corporate ladders. Don't join them. Build pyramid organizations. Don't join them. Think manufacture, not retail. To become a shark, you have to think like one. Sharks think big and guppies think small. As a shark, you have to drill down into your belief system and change your mindset. Think globally, not locally. Think to lead, not to follow. Think to innovate, not to copy. The transformation from guppy to shark starts with your thoughts as your focus moves from the few to the many. When you engage your fast lane road, be the shark and use the entire ocean as your playground. Ever watch a school of fish? Each fish doesn't act as a single unit. They act in unison as a collective. Unfortunately, most people can't see the danger of this analogy. They're just one fish immersed in a collective controlled by a force greater than themselves. And who is attracted to these schools of fish? The sharks. Be the shark, the predator, not the guppy. Be a driver, not a hitchhiker. Invest in your brand only. Whose money tree are you growing? Are you investing in your brand or in someone else's? Ever sit in traffic and spot a car plastered with decals and stickers of some company? From network marketing companies selling Akai drinks to one of the largest makeup companies in the country, these decals are official decrees to the world from the driver. Yes, folks, I invest my life into someone else's brand. They're guppies in a shark-infested ocean. I recently had a middle-aged woman drive up to me in my gym's parking lot. She stopped and asked me about my Lamborghini and its vanity license plate. Then she opened a Pandora's box and asked, "Do you do any network marketing?" Before I unloaded, I glanced at the car she was driving. She drove a rusty old Hyundai that needed new tires and a paint job. The rear window was missing, unless, of course, you believe duct tape suffices as an adequate replacement to glass. The side doors were plastered with decals and magnetized signs exclaiming the greatness of her network marketing company. "Make a huge income from home." I wondered, how could she advertise, "Make a huge income from home," when obviously she isn't earning a huge income from home? I respectfully asked her why she invests in a business that she doesn't control. Why are you painting someone else's big picture when you should be painting your own? She smiled, raised her dream stealer defenses, and rejected my analysis. As if what she was doing was working and reasonable, her mind was closed to my suggestions. That's fine. Keep doing what you're doing and see if that gets you where you want to go. Don't listen to me. You came up to me, and I'm the one who's retired and living the dream. I know that sounds arrogant and pretentious, and I apologize, but logic eludes most people. When you blindly invest your life and your time into someone else's brand, you become a part of their marketing plan. You become a swab of paint in their big picture. You resign yourself to the slim possibility of making good money versus big money. Not investing in my own brand was one of the most serious mistakes I made as a young entrepreneur. Hitchhiking a fast lane is an epidemic that deceives many would-be entrepreneurs. And I say would be because hitchhiking isn't entrepreneurial, because at the heart of entrepreneurship is creation and innovation. Hitchhikers aren't pioneers. They don't create or innovate. They sell, operate, and manage. If the driver decides to close up shop, you're out of luck. If the driver decides to discontinue a product and it's your sole source of income, you're out of luck. Fastlaners control their brands, their properties, and their financial plans. They don't blindly give it to others and hope for the best. Network marketing as a fast lane, only if. Network marketing is a fast lane, but only if you own the network marketing company. As a fastlaner, you want to create these companies, not join them. I have a lot of Facebook friends who are spiritedly engaged in network marketing. I don't espouse my world vision on them because they have to see it for themselves. If they truly believe that $20,000 a month is a great income, let them believe it. If they truly believe that their income stream will be passive forever, let them believe it. If they truly believe that they are in control, let them believe it. These people have to see the truth on their own. It took me 4 network marketing companies to expose the truth. And that truth? The only people in the company who are living in houses on the Pacific Ocean with a stable full of exotic cars were the founders in the inner circle, not the distributors who signed up years later. I don't hide my discontent for network marketing, although the reason for my discontent is often misconstrued. Network marketing is a hitchhiking strategy that disguises itself as an entrepreneurial activity. My discontent lies in the misconception. Millions fall for the pitches such as be your own boss or own your own company or passive residual income. While there is a small sliver of validity to these claims, they cloud the real essence of MLM, which is sales, distribution, and training, not entrepreneurship. I was involved in 4 MLM companies. Not once do I remember dictating product decisions, research and development, marketing restrictions, rules, cost analysis, or anything else fundamental to owning a business. As a network marketer, you don't own a business. You own a job managing and creating a sales organization. That's like stuffing money under the mattress and calling it an investment. Years ago, I had friends who did well in MLM, and some of them still do. Heck, I even did okay. But 2 things always nagged at me. First, I had no control. I was at the mercy of the company, its policies, its procedures, its product line, its cost structure, and whatever mandate they set forth. I'd be stuck with it. I remembered when my company discontinued its best product and my income plummeted through no fault of my own. My friend who was making a nice living at MLM, he quit due to opposition over corporate decisions. And from what I hear, every few years he jumps from opportunity to opportunity. He continually repeats the cycle. Climb aboard some hot opportunity, run it dry, and move to the next. Last I checked, he isn't rich, nor is he retired. He's not stuck in a rat race, but a rabbit race from one carrot to the next. The second nag at my mind was clear. I didn't feel like an entrepreneur. I felt like a worker bee stuck in a chaotic hive. I felt like an employee of a large company that was benefiting from the fruit of my hard work, even when hours of that hard work yielded few dollars. My essence knew I was violating a multitude of commandments and rules. The rule of everyone, the commandment of entry, and the commandment of control. My dislike for the model lies in the misdirection conveyed to would-be participants. They think they're entrepreneurs when they're just salespeople and sales managers in a fastlaner's plan. Now, can these folks make a huge chunk of change? Of course. I don't argue that fact. Top salespeople in Fortune 500 companies also make a lot of money. Lottery winners also make a lot of money. We're talking odds here, not absolutes. MLM distributors are commissioned employees disguised as entrepreneurs and working for a fastlaner in a regime they don't control, but the fastlaner does. Network marketers are soldiers in a fastlaner's army. So now let me be clear to all those MLM folks out there ready to hang me. I love network marketing as an entrepreneur. If I ever want to invent a product that needs distribution, network marketing would be my first consideration. Furthermore, MLM has excellent educational value, sales, motivation, team building, and networking. Network marketing can accelerate your future. As for my friend, he's a hitchhiker of the fast lane. What he doesn't realize is that to fully exploit the fast lane road, you don't join a network marketing company, you create it. You must be the creator of the company that people are dying to join. You must be the controller of policy and product and the producer. The Fastlander creates and invests in his own brand. The Hitchhiker climbs aboard someone else's and hopes to piggyback a ride. If you don't control your system, your money tree, and your brand, you control nothing. You must sit atop of the pyramid and serve the masses. Stop climbing pyramids and start building them. Chapter Summary, Fastlane Distinctions. Hitchhikers relinquish control over their business to a Fastlaner. There's a difference between good money and big money. Hitchhikers can make good money while Fastlaners make big money, sometimes legendary money. In a driver-hitchhiker relationship, the driver always retains control and the hitchhiker is at the mercy of the driver. Hitchhikers are a party to someone else's Fastlane plan. Make the world your habitat of play in an organization you control. Network marketing has little to do with entrepreneurship, but more to do with sales, networking, training, and motivation. Network marketing fails both the commandments of control and entry, and sometimes need. Network marketers are soldiers in a Fastlaner's army. Network marketing is a powerful distribution system. As a Fastlaner, seek to own one, not join one. Chapter 33, The Commandment of Scale. In business, to be a success, you only have to be right once. Mark Cuban. Speed limit, 15 or 150. When your business road violates the commandment of scale, wealth acceleration is incarcerated within constricting speed limits. Drive any road with a speed limit of 15 and you aren't going to get anywhere fast. Scale is about leverage, and leverage is what gives the Fastlane wealth equation its power. The commandment of scale. Business leverage is like a playing field or a habitat of water. You can choose to inhabit the ocean or a pool at the local park. There are 6 business habitats. Local community, the pool. County city, the pond. Statewide, the lagoon. Regional, the lake. National, the sea. Worldwide, the ocean. Scale is difficult to find locally or in a pool that fits only a small number of people. Sure, it can be done, but it requires magnitude. And magnitude doesn't come cheap. If you own a tanning salon, your habitat is local. If you own an upscale restaurant, your habitat is the county or city. If you own an internet company, your habitat is worldwide. The larger the habitat, the greater the potential speed or leverage of your fast lane. Swing for home runs, not singles. Billionaire Mark Cuban recently wrote on his blog that it doesn't matter how many times you strike out in business because you only have to be right once, and that once can set you up for life. In other words, be in the business of home runs. Business is like baseball. Play on a field where you can hit home runs. Don't play on a field where they're prohibited. For example, if you own a clothing boutique on Main Street, you violate the commandment of scale because your pool of customers is drawn from the local trading area. To break scale, the business owner needs to introduce leverage in the form of replication. Open more stores, sell franchises, or sell on the internet. Unfortunately, most entrepreneurs engage in singles-only businesses. Their playing field is stunted. Their road screams, speed limit, 15. The home run is impossible, and their habitat shriveled. If you're a massage therapist, you won't awake one day and have 10,000 patrons outside your door. There simply is no leverage. And if you don't have leverage in the Fastlane wealth equation, you don't have a chance. The commandment of scale is like a toll booth on the road to the law of affection. The Fastlane wealth equation, disarmed. When you violate the commandment of scale, you disarm the Fastlane wealth equation and demote its power to slow lane status. We call the Fastlane wealth equation. Wealth equals net profit plus asset value. Asset value is predicated on net profit, which is predicated by unit profit multiplied by units sold. Net profit equals unit sold times unit profit. If unit sold has a ceiling, you handcuff your ability to create leverage. Without leverage, you can't create wealth exponentially. When you travel a business road incapable of scale, you render the fast lane wealth equation impotent. My favorite example is the guy who buys a popular sandwich franchise in his local neighborhood. This business violates the commandment of scale because the variables, unit sold and unit profit, are implicitly limited. How many sandwiches can this guy humanly sell in one day? 50? 100? How many hours are in the day? 24? See the similarity? The objective of units sold is to have an upper limit greater than 100. How about 1,000? How about 10,000? Or 100,000? Is there anything this sandwich shop owner can do to sell more sandwiches in one day? Under his current structure, there isn't. He is limited in scale to his local trading area. He'll never sell a cold cut combo to a man living in Australia, let alone the neighboring city. Scale is limited, causing this road to have a constricting speed limit, just like a slow lane road. To make matters worse, the other end of the equation is also limited, unit profit. What is the maximum unit profit on a sandwich and a drink? $2? Again, we are operating under a ceiling of low numbers. These numbers don't transcend wealth, they limit wealth. Now let me clarify before you hammer me over the head, I'm not suggesting that a local restaurant owner can't get rich. In fact, I know a few restaurant owners who do quite well, except they operate in a different class of restaurant. Upscale establishments where scale and magnitude have more reach. If your average dinner bill is $200 and you draw patrons from all over the city, not just the local neighborhood, you operate on a different scale. Unit profit isn't $2 a sandwich, but $40 a person, and with alcohol, it climbs to $60. Reach or magnitude equals scale. To achieve scale, magnitude or reach must increase. Magnitude is naturally increased with price or cost. If you sell Lamborghinis over Hyundais, you have greater magnitude simply by the implicit price of Lamborghinis. You are near affection. Lamborghini owners most likely exploit the law of affection. If you are a real estate agent for the rich and sell multi-million dollar estates, you achieve magnitude implicit by price. Higher prices and cost implicitly drive magnitude. If you successfully sell the most expensive apartment building in Manhattan, you have had an effect of magnitude and realize scale. If you are operating with magnitude, you are near or at affection. Reach, exclusive of magnitude, also achieves scale. Reach is massive numbers. The more people you reach, the greater scale potential. Who does your business serve? The local neighborhood or the world? The bigger your pool of play, the bigger your potential for wealth. The guy stuck on Main Street selling sandwiches has no scale and no magnitude. Is there anything this guy can do to turn his $40,000 a year profit into $400,000? Nope. He's done before he even started. He didn't buy a franchise, he bought a job. He will never get rich until he wakes up and realizes that scale is not reached by selling $1 margin sandwiches to 100 people a day. Scale is leverage. The commandment of scale demands a business that maximizes the fast lane wealth equation. Give the law of affection a chance. Give wealth a chance. How do you know if your business or potential business honors the commandment of scale? Here are some questions you can ask. Can the net income of this business scale limitlessly, say from $2,000 a month to $200,000 a month? Can the asset value of this business scale into the millions? Can this business impact millions? Or does it impact hundreds? Is its customer pool the world or a small community in the city? Can this business be replicated and expanded beyond the local trading area by franchising, chaining, or additional units? Best case scenario, what is the unit sold potential? 100 or 100 million? Best case scenario, how pliable is unit profit? Does it have magnitude? If you can't affirm these questions, you might be stuck in a restrictive business where wealth creation is stifled. Tiny habitats create tiny wealth. Scale is large numbers. Think big, nationally, and globally. Big numbers or scale is the inroad to the law of affection. To make millions, you must affect millions. This doesn't happen in a small store on Main Street, but in hundreds of stores across the country. Drive Affection's Neighborhood. A wealth-seeking friend of mine asked if I thought buying a coffee franchise was a good idea. I said no. My answer shocked him because he played the be-your-own-boss drum. I didn't like the idea because the gateway into the law of affection was barricaded. The problem? His goal was financial freedom. If this was his goal, owning a coffee franchise in the local community probably wasn't going to do the trick. With a coffee shop, he has no access to the law of affection. Selling 100 lattes a day simply won't make an impact in either scale or magnitude. And since he didn't want to own 20 of these franchises, but just one, he was barricading himself from the law. Road closed. If you can't access the law of affection, you won't get rich. The conduit to all wealth is via the law of affection. For the slow laner, the law of affection has to be hit by massive intrinsic value explosion. Sing in front of millions, entertain millions, play ball in front of millions. And yet, for the fast laner, the law of affection is leveraged by scale or asset value explosion. Sell millions, help millions, serve millions, impact millions. Law of Affection Barricades. There are three barricades that prevent entrepreneurs from realizing the law of affection: scale, magnitude, and source. The strongest barricade to affection is scale. If you can't serve millions, you won't make millions. Returning to my friend's coffee shop example, his unit sold variable within the fast lane wealth equation is restricted because his cafe is confined to the local community. His sales are mathematically caged to a stiff number. Scale is absent. He will never sell coffee to someone in New Zealand. A business that lacks scale acts like a car with a speed governor that prevents acceleration. My friend's only option to break scale would be to purchase more franchises in more locations. If he owned 29 franchises across the state, he suddenly would be serving 6,000 coffees a day. Scale becomes prevalent, and attached to scale is the law of affection. Of course, the optimum fast lane strategy is not buying franchises, but selling them. If my friend doesn't want to own multiple franchises, he can't break the barricade of scale. Without scale, unit sold, or magnitude, high unit profit, he drives a business that will produce a weak asset value. His wealth equation becomes retarded, and the law of affection quarantined, remanding him to a middle-class life work existence. With a middle-class income and a weak asset valuation, he defects to a wealth equation emblematic of the slow lane. The other barricade to affection is magnitude. Because our coffee shop owner is restricted in scale, his other option is to scale by magnitude. Unfortunately, the magnitude road is also closed. Unit profit cannot be manipulated. Every sale won't generate a profit of greater than just a few bucks, and raising prices reduces units sold. A $100,000 profit on each coffee sold is impossible. While direct access to the law of affection is a foolproof road to wealth, indirect access isn't so clear, since affection always trickles up to owners and producers, not down to employees or consumers. For example, if you work as a doctor at a private care facility, you could argue that you have magnitude and therefore you should be rich. In fact, all doctors should be rich since they have magnitude, right? Well, not exactly. The fault in this presumption is that the law of affection honors only those in control. That private healthcare facility? The facility's owner receives the full benefit of affection, not the doctors he hired. The doctors on staff aren't guaranteed access to affection because they don't control the system. Can they be rich anyway? Sure, but that decision is left to intrinsic value evaluations to be made by the owner of the system. Doctors who own practices and hire other doctors get full access to affection and get rich. Affection is always biased toward the architect of the system. How to access the law. If you want to access the law of affection, drive a road that can break through scale or magnitude while controlling its source. If you can't be the source, serve the source. Thankfully, you can easily determine which roads run parallel to the law of affection. Whatever your road, regardless of roadmap, can it directly scale to impact millions or scale? Can it tremendously impact a few or magnitude? Here are some examples. If you invent a gadget that millions can use, you have direct scale and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. If you are chosen as a finalist for American Idol, you have direct scale and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. If you build a website that serves single moms, you have direct scale and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. If you are two management positions away from a CFO position at a Fortune 100 company, you have indirect scale and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. If you're an attorney and take cases that involve wrongful deaths, you have indirect magnitude and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. If you create a successful retail store and franchise it to 300 entrepreneurs around the country, you have both scale and magnitude and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. If you invent a machine that detects skin cancer, you have magnitude and scale and the law is accessible. Fast wealth is possible. Think big, but think scale or magnitude. Analyze your Fastlane equation and examine the variables. What are your maximum units sold and maximum profit per unit? What is the size of your customer pool? For example, as an author, I have scale, and with scale, the law of affection is accessible. Who is my audience? The whole English-speaking world, tens of millions of people. I'm reminded of scale anytime this book is ordered from Australia or New Zealand. My upper limit is the world. My road has no speed limit, and that grants access to the law of affection. Chapter Summary, Fastlane Distinctions. Your total pool of customers determines your habitat. The larger the habitat, the greater the potential for wealth. A business can be a singles or a home run based business. Its strength is determined by scale, which is derived by habitat. The Fastlane wealth equation is disarmed when you violate the commandment of scale. Scale is achieved in reach, unit sold, or magnitude, unit profit. The law of affection is the primary conduit to wealth, which can be roadblocked by scale, magnitude, or source. Affection consequences trickle up to owners and producers. Breaking scale or magnitude indirectly in an uncontrolled entity is not a guarantee of wealth. To gain access to affection, you need to break the barrier of scale or magnitude in an entity you control. Scale, magnitude, or source deficiencies create governors on the speed of wealth creation.
Chapter 34, The Commandment of Time. I am long on ideas but short on time. I expect to live only 100 years. Thomas Edison. Break the binds that tie. The final Fastlane commandment is the commandment of time. The commandment of time requires that your business detach from your time. Can your business substitute for you and blossom into a money tree? Passive income is a fast lane objective, and that comes from the commandment of time. Remember this. Owning a business doesn't guarantee wealth or detachment from time. Some business owners are married to their businesses because their businesses violate the commandment of time. The business ostensibly becomes a job and a lifelong prison sentence. While giving up your heart and soul for a business is perfectly normal in startup, growth, and maturation stage, it isn't a prescription I'd want to endure for 40 years. The commandment of time asks, can this business be automated and systemized to operate while I'm absent? Are the margins thick enough to hire human resource seedlings? Can my operation benefit from the introduction of a money tree seedling? How can I get this business to operate exclusive of my time? Jobs are time trades for income, and yes, so are some businesses. The goal of the fast lane is a disconnection of your time from income, even if that income isn't millions. Would you rather work 10 hours a week and earn $60,000 or work 70 hours a week for $140,000? I take the former over the latter every time.
Ashlyn Gardner loves the arts and literature. Following the prophetic advice of gurus, she sets off to do what she loves. She opens a coffee shop featuring art of local artisans and hosts weekly literature readings. Like a new love relationship, her new business starts with a bang and is the source of excitement and eagerness. However, after 2 years, her business normalizes and the luster fades into a hardship. Ashlyn realizes that she doesn't own her business. It owns her. She's up at 4 a.m. to open and has to be there at 8 p.m. to close. The 24/7 of the business is a perpetual nag. Employees come and go, and the good ones demand pay she can't afford. Her social life dies, and her boyfriend breaks up with her because she never has time. Her gym membership expires, and with it, her weekly yoga class. Seeking to reclaim her time and her life, Ashlyn considers hiring a general manager. Unfortunately, hiring a GM would put her margins in the red. She won't work the business for free, and the cost of her life isn't worth the profit she makes. 3 years into the business, she closes up shop and looks to return to the ranks of employee over employer.
Ashlyn didn't fail at business. Her coffee shop was successful and earned her a modest living. Where did she fail? She failed the commandment of time, and upon entering this business, like most business owners, didn't think through it past the excitement of the newness. A money tree that never grows. A successful business isn't fun and games, especially one that violates the commandment of time. Often people get into business with the wrong idea of what it will be like. Fueled by gurus and life coaches, many are misled, believing that be your own boss or do what you love is enough motivational fire to sprout success. These would-be business owners merge onto roads that might as well trail a path through the desert. And sorry, money trees don't grow in the desert. Think about Ashlyn and her quaint coffee shop. Was she her own boss? Sure, but it wasn't enough. Ashlyn's coffee shop didn't necessarily fail, but it failed her. She was motivated by her passion for art and literature. She was motivated to be her own boss. While such dispositions are healthy, it isn't enough to change a deficient road. As a fastlaner, your road should be traveled with the intention to make it automated. You want passivity and a living money tree. When you fail the commandment of time, the failure is caused by one of two obstacles. They are, number one, you don't have access to the seeds because the road you started with is deficient. Number two, the seeds won't grow in infertile soil. If your business is based on one of the money tree seedlings, it should be capable of growing a money tree. Content systems, computer systems, software systems, distribution systems, and human resource systems are all seedlings to money trees. If your business isn't based upon one, can one be added to make it passive? For Ashlyn's coffee shop, she recognized she needed the seed to a money tree, human resources, in the form of a general manager. She couldn't justify the cost, and the seed was inaccessible. Her road started deficient and wouldn't grow a planted seed. Had she ignored her finances and hired a general manager anyway, hence planting the seed, she would have discovered later that it was infertile and incapable of harvesting a money tree. The problem with most business roads is that they are infertile breeding grounds for money trees simply because they fail the commandment of time. The seeds aren't accessible, and those seeds that are accessible won't take to the soil. Chapter Summary, Fastlane Distinctions. A business attached to your time is a job. A business that earns income exclusive of your time satisfies the commandment of time. To satisfy the commandment of time, start with a business that uses a money tree seedling or introduce one. Chapter 35, Rapid Wealth, The Interstates. You can't live a perfect day without doing something for someone who will never be able to repay you. John Wooden. The Crossroads. If you want to get across the country, drive the fastest roads, not the slowest. Seems logical, except when it comes to financial independence. Instead of driving the fastest roads, most people drive the slowest, and in some cases, a road that won't even get them there. Starting a business is a big decision. Treat it with cursory interest, and your business resembles a hobby. And businesses that are run like hobbies pay like hobbies. Back in my mid-20s, I dabbled in a variety of businesses with no lasting success. It was the crossroads of my life, and my latest job flavor of the month was driving limousines. Sure, I took the job because I had bills to pay, but I had other motives. Infiltration. I thought I wanted to own a limousine company. Having never been involved in the limo business, I figured I'd get a job in the business and learn the ropes. After a year in the business, my opportunity, my crossroads, arrived. The owner of the limousine company put it up for sale and offered it to me for no money down. Here was my opportunity, a chance to own a limousine service. Except there was one problem. I was torn. Just weeks earlier, I decided to move to Phoenix and was preparing to move. Now this. Should I stay? Also, after watching the current owner dredge the constant demands of the business for over a year, I realized something very important. I didn't enjoy it. The business was 24/7 with a lot of early mornings. Me? I am one cranky bastard in the morning. So I was faced with a choice that could be either treasonous or accelerative. Was this a road I wanted to take? Did I want to pass on this great no-money-down opportunity and forgo Phoenix? What did I do? I compiled my weighted average decision matrix, WADM, to give me clarity. Yes, I really used the stuff in this book. Obviously, Phoenix won, and I didn't buy the limousine company. But what was in that decision matrix that helped me identify the right road and the right course of action? I knew the 5 fast lane commandments and which roads of business had fast lane purity, and I knew the odds of implementation of both. Fast lane purity, 5 commandments. Thou shalt not invest in a needless business. Thou shalt not trade time for money. Thou shalt not operate on a limited scale. Thou shalt not relinquish control. Thou shalt not let a business startup be an event over process. When I analyzed the limousine service as a potential business, it wasn't a pure fast lane. The operation had satisfied the control and entry criterion, but it didn't have scale. It served the northwest suburbs of Chicago. The operation didn't have time detachment. I would have had to log long hours, and the margins weren't thick enough to deploy human resources. And it certainly didn't solve an unmet need. I mean, in Chicago, limo companies were a dime a dozen. To fast lane the business, it would have required a lot of time, effort, and money. Deep down, I knew I wanted to be involved in a business that was pure fast lane from the start, not one that needed to be molded. The purest fast lanes have the best wealth potential, and I knew it. When you grace the law of affection, money moves your way. What are the purest fast lane roads that possess super fast speeds? Which roads can tap into the law of affection and start fast lane? The 3 fast lane interstates. I call the most potent fast lane roads the 3 I's, or the 3 interstates, because they possess the fastest upper speed limits and meet, or can meet, all 5 fast lane commandments. The 3 interstates are: number 1, internet. Number 2, innovation. Number 3, intentional iteration. Each interstate road is an umbrella for dozens of other roads. Put all 3 together and you have hundreds of roads available for your travel. Potent fast lane number 1, the internet. The most potent interstate is an internet business. The internet has made more millionaires in the last decade than any medium out there. The internet has and is destroying old hardline industries such as travel agents, stockbrokers, newspapers, and magazines. The internet is the shark of the fast lane. The internet is where I found my fortune, and it's the one reason why I declined my opportunity to own a limousine company. The internet is the best fast lane available because it immediately obeys the 5 commandments to the fast lane, assuming a need-based premise. It naturally scales to a worldwide audience. It systemizes to automation via computer systems. It's a medium you can control, which unfortunately most don't, and its barriers are still strong enough to prevent everyone from entry. Internet business models, or roads, fall into 7 broad categories. Number 1, subscription base. Offer users access to data, information, software, and charge a monthly fee. Data can be leads, sales information, a proprietary database, or good old-fashioned pornography. When 10,000 people pay you $9.95 per month for your information, you're balling the fast lane. When I owned my company, I paid for many web services, all subscription-based, from data analytics, who is visiting my site, to affiliate management, who wants to offer my service. One particular company ran a website monitoring service that kept track of website uptime. On its homepage, it advertised how many clients it monitored. At the time, it said 20,000 clients served, and I was paying about $50 a month for the service. Assuming my fee was average, 20,000 times $50 equals $1 million in gross revenue per month. This is a perfect example of an internet business system in which the business is the system itself. No products, no shipping, no headaches. I'd speculate that this website enjoys margins upwards of 75% and nets in the $750,000 range per month. How quickly would you become a millionaire earning $750,000 a month? Or would you rather save $200 a month from your $45,000 a year salary? The disparaging field of play is laughable. Examples of subscription sites are RealtyTrack.com and LoopNet.com. Number 2, content-based. Content-based models are online news magazines and blogs that disseminate information to a particular niche or industry. These services provide content for free consumption and sell advertising to parties who want to reach those eyeballs. My Fastlane form can be considered a content-based revenue model. I consider content-based revenue models the most difficult for success because entry barriers have significantly declined and its success is predicated on high traffic. Also, content systems heavily engage in affiliate programs, which is a hitchhiking structure. Number 3, lead generation. Lead generation services often provide a service to consumers while simultaneously aggregating a fragmented industry. This is what I did for the limousine business. I pooled a highly fragmented industry into one centralized source, brought consumers into the mix, and sold that consumer information to limousine companies. Lead generation is popular with fragmented industries where the industry players consist of mostly small to medium-sized businesses. Lead generation in the airline business probably wouldn't work, while lead generation for plastic surgeons would. Lead generation solves two needs. Number one, the consumer's desire to save time and money. And number two, the business owner's need to find new customers inexpensively. Number 4, social networks. Social networks are spin-offs of content systems. Instead of pooling content for eyeballs, people are pulled into groups or tribes. Facebook started off as a pool for college-age students and evolved into a generic social network for all ages. MySpace targets the high school crowd. LinkedIn hits the upwardly mobile professional. Social networks are mere aggregators of like-minded communities, from mystery novel writers to gearheads who like to rebuild engines on the weekend. Number 5, brokerage systems. Brokers bring buyers and sellers together and facilitate transactions. They are market makers for a particular industry and earn money typically on each transaction. Examples of known brokers are PayPal, Elance, Cars Direct, and Travelocity. Number 6, advertising. Similar to brokerages, advertisers merge buyers and sellers together and accept advertising fees in lieu of transaction fees. For example, I owned a website that listed limousines for sale. The site accepted advertising fees for each limousine placed for sale. I merely introduced buyers and sellers. Some services leverage both brokerage and advertising together, such as eBay. Search engines like Google and Yahoo operate both advertising and brokerage models. Number 7, e-commerce. E-commerce is the act of selling goods, services, and information over the internet. Amazon.com, CSNstores.com are all examples of large-scale e-commerce providers. However, many local stores have expanded and created scale with the e-commerce model. For example, in my backyard, I have 24 solar lights that I bought online from a small retailer in Minnesota that operates an e-commerce store. Just years ago, that store was local with no scale. Now with an e-commerce presence, they are worldwide and are selling products to retired guys in Phoenix. E-commerce can also be information. E-books are the most popular form of information distribution on the internet. When I sell my book in e-book form on the internet, I'm engaged in e-commerce. I can sell books out of my trunk by sitting in the parking lot at Arizona State University or I can set up a website and sell books to folks in Europe. When you look at the internet as a fast lane road, it is immensely powerful when examined against our fast lane wealth equation. Wealth equals net profit plus asset value. Within the units sold variable within net income, the world becomes your upper limit when dealing on the internet. Additionally, asset value, a component of the fast lane wealth equation, is not only determined by net income, but by traffic metrics. Many websites are sold for billions and don't have a penny of profit. Traffic, eyeballs, or visitors to a website, also has a boundless upside scale. The fast lane variables of net profit and asset value have a virtually limitless upside. Potent fast lane number 2, innovation. Innovation is another broad stroke of fast lane purity and encompasses many roads. It is the good old-fashioned way to get rich. Invent a product, a service, or a piece of information, manufacture it, and then distribute it. Innovation covers any act of creation followed by distribution. Let me repeat that. Innovation involves two acts. One, manufacture, and two, distribution. Invent a product and sell it by infomercial. Sell it on the internet. Sell it on QVC. Sell it through 10,000 network marketing distributors. Or sell it to 20 wholesalers that then sell it to 20,000 retailers. What is the product of innovation? Virtually anything that solves a need or fulfills a desire. Here are some examples. Food. Beer, barbecue sauce, cookies, secret recipes. Household. Robots that vacuum, tools, hangers. Health and vitality. Vitamins, herbs, energy drinks, bars, male enhancement formulas. Information. Books, magazines, subscription newsletters. Personal. Clothing, purses, shoes, gloves, gowns. Automotive. Accessories, add-ons, stick-ons. Inventing is still recognized as the default get-rich-quick method out there. And yes, it is alive and well. However, don't be fooled. Inventing really isn't about inventing the vehicle, the telephone, or the goofy Segway. The core activity of inventors is just taking something and improving it or modifying it. Take something old and stale and make it better. Take an underexposed product, make it your own, and reintroduce it to the world. Take something unconventional and make it conventional. On TV, I watched a successful entrepreneur interview in which the inventor simply repackaged vodka from boring old clear bottles to colorful bottles with razzle-dazzle. In fact, for my birthday, I received a skull-shaped bottle of vodka. Vodka has been around for centuries, yet an entrepreneur took a stale product and added an element of uniqueness and differentiation. My favorite example is the Snuggie, an oversized mass-marketed blanket with arms. That concept has been around for years, but they took the concept, repackaged it, remarketed it, and wham, 40 million sold later, they had a blockbuster. Innovation is a dual-challenge process, manufacture and distribution. Inventing a product that solves a need is only half the battle. The other half is getting your invention into the hands of millions, which involves a variety of distribution channels. Infomercial, sell via mass media. Retail, sell to distributors and wholesalers. And direct marketing, sell via print media, postal mail, or internet. For example, when I wrote this book, I was the means of manufacture. I wrote it, put it together, had it edited, had it physically published, and then I manufactured it. I engaged in innovation. However, like all innovation roads, manufacture is just a tiny battle in a larger war. Distribution is where the war is won. A great product is worthless if it doesn't get into the hands of people, and that requires distribution. For my book, I will need to leverage Amazon, a distribution system, book distributors, wholesalers, and the internet, another distribution system, if I am to succeed. Yes, your product invention can be something you invent, yet is manufactured in China, or an ebook you write in a weekend. Innovation from books to products is fast lane. Have you ever wondered why people sell get-rich-quick books, and yet the content is just regurgitated blather from 30 other books? The authors know that authoring is a potent fast lane. The challenge of any authoring fast lane is never the book or the words themselves. Some of the greatest books in the world go unread. By the mediocre stuff sells millions. The difference lies in marketing, public relations, and just good old-fashioned business know-how. Writing a book is not a business. Selling the book is. If I'm obsessively intent on selling this book to millions, I have to manufacture, then distribute. I have to sell, market, promote, appear, speak, interview, and write. I have to invest in